Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way you think about life and spirituality. Today is April 4th, 2014. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want. She is the co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles teachers and students and appeared in the documentary A Course in Miracles, the movie. Susan facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado, and I'm thrilled that she has agreed to be on the show not only today, but she plans to join me once a month. Now, Susan has just returned from Temecula, California, where she participated in a week-long class at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. She's going to share some of what was discussed in that class, including two of the most important tools that we can use on our path. As you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. One of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and on the left side of the page, click the chat button. You will be automatically redirected to our chat room on Facebook. So please feel free to post your questions or comments, because I love to see what you're thinking and what you're talking about out there. So let's get to our discussion. Susan, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, CA. It's nice to be back.
It's wonderful. I always look forward to our conversations. And because I knew you had come back from Temecula, I kind of didn't want to talk to you before the show because I wanted you to share all the great gems on the air. So one of the first things I wanted to ask you, though, or say is the audience knows I'm always talking about the Foundation for A Course in Miracles because we use a lot of materials, some of the recordings during the show, you know, what I call the Ken spot every week. And so there's an online bookstore, and I'm always talking about that. But, you know, I'm really not very familiar with what else the Foundation does, like those classes. And I've noticed you call them the Academy. And so I'm just wondering, before we talk about the class, could you just tell us a little bit about the Foundation? And, like, what are you talking about when you're saying you went to an Academy class?
Sure. Well, the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is the was created as a teaching foundation for Ken Wapnick's teaching, basically. It was the inspiration of his wife, Gloria Wapnick, back in the 1980s. And Ken Wapnick worked with Helen and Bill and was the original editor of the course and, you know, had devoted his life. He recently passed away at the end of the year, this past year, but devoted, you know, 35 years or whatever that was to his passion and brilliant understanding of the course, and really, you know, both he and his wife dedicated their lives to teaching this through this foundation that they created. And they had a center in Roscoe, New York for many years, and there were prior places in New York State before that, briefly. But all of that history of that is on my website in an interview with Gloria Wapnick that I did at the end of last year, which was really fabulous and hopefully will be the beginning of other ones. But anyway, so people can get more information by going to foraysinforgiveness.com and clicking on the interviews page and Gloria Wapnick. And that interview is very rich with information about this. But they recently, in recent years, probably, I don't know, early 2000s, moved the foundation to Temecula, California, where it's been, you know, where they've been teaching for the last, until now. And so when they offer, there's online information there that's free and downloadable. There's also all of there's an online bookstore with all of Ken's CDs and, you know, books and just this rich volume of amazing work that he has done. And they offer these classes at the foundation throughout the year. And the Academy, I think, was, and I'm not, you know, an expert at this by any means, but I believe it's a reference to Plato's Academy in ancient Greece for philosophers. And Ken was very steeped in among many other subjects that he had studied, you know, and was brilliant in, had studied a lot of Western philosophy and had a great respect for Plato, who and the course itself has very Platonic roots. And so I think that the idea of the academy was a place that, you know, the place that you go to and kind of retreat from the world and to learn and to really, you know, to learn a truth, a wisdom school kind of thing. And so that was the, I think the reference to the, you know, calling it academy classes comes from that idea. When in the way I've referred to it and thought of it is that, although there's really no distinction, Ken would offer these week-long academy classes, which were all taught by Ken for 5 days. And then, you know, throughout the year interspersed with, there would be these 3-day classes that were taught by Ken, partially taught by Ken and partially taught by the staff members. So this academy class, this week-long one that I just got back from a couple weeks ago, was the first one of its kind that was taught, you know, since Ken has passed, and the staff, the 3 staff members, taught something that had been planned by Ken. You know, the subject matter had been planned by Ken and presented this academy. And I have to say that it was, you know, of course, you know, I mean, I didn't quite know what to expect because, you know, Ken was such a powerfully kind and loving and you know, a presence that I can't even describe. Just being in his presence was so healing in itself. So, you know, I think people were a little curious of what was going to be happening. But the staff was so filled with the teaching and their, you know, having integrated everything that Ken had taught them, being close to him and being, you know, practicing this in their own lives, as we're all trying to do, the way that they had integrated the teachings and were able to present it from the inside out was so moving and so, you know, just palpable and powerful and I think deeply inspiring for everybody who was there. There's a spaciousness that you feel at this place that I used to think, you know, I thought was Ken. Of course, we like to see it outside ourselves, right?
Right.
But really the whole message of his teaching, the message of the course's teaching, and what was so, you know, powerfully brought home in the way that the staff, you know, just stepped up and were filled with this teaching was that what Ken had is within us all. And that is where we're, you know, that's what we're growing into. That's what this practice can lead us to, the awareness that, that we're all the same and that we're all loved and loving by, you know, by the same God, and that we never separated and, you know, that this practice will bring us there. And we, you know, if we just suck it up and do what the course is saying, we're going to get there, you know, and maybe we're not ready yet. I mean, maybe we're not ready yet in all circumstances in our own hierarchy of illusions that the course talks about. But, you know, our willingness to practice this in our lives day to day as things seem to arise outside us to disturb us is really does heal our minds. And it really, we really can find our way home through this path.
Nice. Well, a couple more technical questions. So how many people are in these classes?
Well, the week-long ones were typically larger. And this is not, you know, I would say about 250, somewhere around there, but don't, you know, that's just
wow.
A ballpark. Yeah,
250 people.
Yeah, yeah,
for
they're
a
big.
Week.
They're big,
wow.
And they're intense because you're confronted.
Yes,
by what the course is saying 24/7. You know, I listen to Ken all the time, but I'm usually on my you know, at my elliptical machine, or I'm in the car, or I'm cooking. I'm doing many multitasking things to avoid actually integrating it, letting a little bit of it seep in at a time. But there, you know, it is very powerful because you're strapped into the seat. and you really have to kind of be there. And of course you can still, your mind can still wander, but, a lot more of it, I think, does sink in. And again, there's this, I think that that idea of just, there's just a spaciousness that I feel, which I believe is just the right mind that we share, you know, that, I mean, that's the holy instance when we have that, that shift in our awareness from teacher, from the ego being our teacher to the Holy Spirit, Jesus, right mind, whatever symbol you want to use, that part of our mind that knows that, that we're, you know, that we're one, that we have only have shared interests, that we're all the same, that we're all included in that, that, that seamless union with God that we think we destroyed. When we're in that, that it's outside of time and space, it's outside of this dream of separation, and there's, you know, it's something that, I can't, it's hard to describe. I just use the word spaciousness. But there's a deep comfort in that. And you know, our desire for that, I think, builds every time we experience it. So being there for a week is such a gift. And, you know, the classes are very, very affordable. I mean, the getting there, not as much maybe, but it's in California, but depending on where you are, but it's certainly a worthwhile thing if people have not experienced, you know, it, for any course students that are out there that have never experienced these classes, I would highly recommend them. There's only one more week-long class, according to what they announced then. Anyway, they were only going to be doing this week-long class in July that was scheduled, had already been scheduled by Ken. And after that, they're going to continue, you know, with the three-day classes, but not the week-long classes. So, but the three-day classes, I've been to those as well, and, you know, are very, very valuable too.
And so do they have a particular curriculum then? Like, for instance, what I'm wondering is, can you just kind of look at the schedule and say, oh, that would be a good time for me, and drop into the class versus saying, oh, well, I really should have taken this one, and this one before. So in other words, can you just take any class?
Yes, yes. There's a, they usually pick some kind of topic. And again, the topic is just a vehicle for whatever, you know, the teaching. The teaching delves into the course, jump, you know, goes all over the material, sometimes in the text, sometimes in the workbook, and really just is, you know, a focus for a theme. But it doesn't matter, because the course is so as you know,
holistic
and symphonic, and so all of the themes are constantly, you know, as in a beautiful symphony, being repeated in different ways, in different melodies, in different you know, really as a way to kind of again just penetrate our resistance so that our heart will open to them. And I think that that's what, you know, so yes, in answer to your question, it doesn't matter. I have gone to different ones, and you can be attracted to a certain title of the workshop, but it doesn't really matter. After my second time going there, I just kind of said, I don't, you know, it's just go whenever it works for you. It doesn't matter. It'll be right, you know. Uh-huh. So yeah, I think it's, you know, I'm so grateful that they are going to be continuing this teaching, and I would love to, you know, the foundation is going to be also continuing to publish all of Ken's, these workshops themselves made it into, you know, are being constantly published as CD sets for people to listen to. So there's still so much of that has not been released, and will take many years to release. So the foundation still has plenty of work cut out for them just sharing Ken's voluminous and you know, brilliant teaching. And
nice. Well, thank you for telling us that, because I think to me it's so ironic, because I had heard of the Course in Miracles, of course, many, many years ago before I ever started studying it. And I was actually living in San Diego, and I had friends in Temecula. And so,
oh wow,
I wasn't in Temecula, you know, I mean, every week or anything like that, but I certainly spent time in Temecula with my friends. And I think that is right about the time that they moved their institute from New York to Temecula. And I think, whoa, I was that close and had no idea.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
I know. It's just how life works out, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
you
when
know,
they
sometimes.
I think when they opened in New York State, you know, was around when I moved to the West Coast. So, yeah, whatever. But yeah, trying it's, to get away from it, right?
Right. Anything to get away from it. So, what was the title of the workshop that you took this past? What was just a couple weeks ago?
Well, it was called "I Am Not a Bread Box," I think.
Oh,
and yes. And it was a reference to, oh gosh, Helen, in Ken's book, Absence from Felicity, I think that's, I've got that right, which is the biography of Helen Schuckman, that he wrote. He tells a story about Helen, and this was, I believe this was pre-course, where she, was, she discovered, and this is kind of a bizarre story, but he used it to illustrate, you know, it was used in this workshop to illustrate an example of the way we identify with our projections. And her husband was apparently very passive aggressive, unlike Helen, who was very aggressive. And so she, and she was a very fastidious person, apparently. And so she discovered in, she opened the bread box one day and her husband's dirty socks were in the bread box. And I guess she was, you know, I mean, Ken tells it much better than I could, but I guess she was just, you know, infuriated. And had there been a weapon, she would have, you know, taken him down. She was marching down the hall with murder on her mind. And at some point in her little, you know, death march there, she stopped and she, something, you know, her right mind clicked in and she just had the awareness that I think I'm a bread box. You know, I think that that's my, that he attacked me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that's a great metaphor for what we all do in the course. And so they were using that to tell, you know, to illustrate how we are so identified with the bodies that we believe we inhabit, that we're constantly feeling victimized by everything and everyone around us, trying to prove that we exist at God's expense, but it's not our fault. And you know, but really, these bodies are our identification with these bodies are the impediment to our awareness of the love that we are. So. So, you know, that was the topic. But of course, it you know, like any topic, it went in and it embraced all of the teachings. And but there were a few themes that they did really. I mean, again, I can't tell you how what a beautiful demonstration all of the three staff members were in terms of really. I mean, you could just tell that they had really lived this and they knew it from the inside out, and that they, you know, they still have they're not at the top of the ladder, but they're so devoted, and they're really, you know, they're allowing their mind to heal through really looking at this in their own lives. And you know, that was, I think it was so inspiring. So, but one of the things, the two tools that you had mentioned, that there were two things when I sent you a little bit of, you know, a couple of things that they had talked about. One of the things that struck me the most when I, you know, kind of looked over my notes afterwards, they kept emphasizing the two most important things in terms of practice. Well, there's more than two really, but the first one would be vigilance, and that's the practice. That's that idea of forgiveness now. That's that idea that my life is a classroom, and I need to, you know, any time that I'm having a reaction, any time that I'm feeling anything but peace throughout my day, I need to, you know, remind myself that it's not for the reason I think, that I'm not a bread box, you know.
Yes.
that I just became afraid again, and I want, you know, this is going to hurt. This is the cause of my suffering, my decision to choose the ego as my teacher. And I could choose, you know, I could choose again. I could allow the awareness of Jesus, Holy Spirit, that realizes that I'm not a body and that nothing real can be threatened. And, you know, I could demonstrate instead true compassion for the fear that we have, that we lost our innocence. And, you know, when I do that, when I do that by recognizing that you're not the problem, then I remember that I'm not the problem either. And, you know, that's really the course's practice of forgiveness. So that, but that only only really helps to heal our mind if we practice it. You know, this is the new purpose of our days, and our willingness to do that is you know, key in this. And then the other thing was along the lines of willingness was really to say that I'm wrong. You know, I'm wrong.
Which is the toughest one, isn't it?
It's tough, you know, to resign. It's very tough to resign as my own teacher. And the ego is so sneaky in the way, the spiritual ego, and the way it tries to sneak in and analyze what's going on and convince us this isn't working and, you know, and make exceptions and blah, blah, blah. And all of the, anyone who's really seriously tried to work with this knows what I'm talking about. So it's just that, you know, I've been saying in my classes since I got back that throughout your day, you know, I mean, whenever you're upset, just remind yourself, you know, I'm wrong and I know nothing. And that at least then we can be taught, you know, and that's, I mean, just that reminder will stop you and open you to another way, because as long as we're insisting on seeing it our way and trying to get Jesus, Holy Spirit, to look at our dream and you know, drag him down into our seeming world, we're not gonna feel better, you know, because he'll be with us, he'll be patient with us, he'll watch with us, but he's never gonna agree with us,
right?
You know.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's just that, you know, so we can be taught when we first admit that we don't know, but until we're ready to do that and we're digging in our heels and trying to make it real and trying to make exceptions and all of the things that we do, you know, which doesn't make us bad, but it's keeping us in hell. It's a mistake. It's based on a lie. And so we have to be willing to kind of let go of the reins, you know?
Yeah, which is so hard because, in fact, I was just thinking, and I'm one of these people, it's so easy to get caught up in some little detail. Like, for instance, I know I go round and round with somebody in my life who just cannot believe that God is not part of the dream. You know, God must have made the world. And so we get all caught up in arguing and or discussing and talking about why is that true? Why is that not true? How could that possibly be? And once again, in a very real way, that's just the ego's distraction.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, yeah, let's get caught up in one of these little issues and then say, oh, none of this stuff works. And yet, if we go right, well, and then we go back to our lives because we, you know, I just think as human people or whatever you want to say, human bodies, we are so convinced that our survival is dependent on being right. And even if we don't think that that's true, and there again, we can argue about that, you know, we do. It's dependent on being right. I mean, it's dependent on being able to take information that we have learned and process it and use it for the future. But the minute we do that, we are trying to, I think as the Course would say, activate the past and predict the future. And we're just convinced that that's what we have to do. And yet, if we just stop and look at our lives, it's like, yeah, I haven't been a very good teacher. I haven't been a very good leader in my life, or there would be more happiness. There would be more everyday joy in my life. And so why can't I just stop and say, well, I guess you were wrong about this. You know, why is that so tough?
Oh, it's so tough. And well, because, you know, I mean, yes, it's so unconscious, I think. And we're so deeply, as you said, invested in, you know, hardwired really as bodies to defend ourselves. And so, you know, it's, and what's so funny in what you said, and I think, again, anybody who practices this would relate, is how blind we are in to the ways that we use A Course in Miracles to bludgeon each other. You know, it's like, oh, it's okay for me to go around correcting other course people and, you know, and to use this against other people on other paths. And, you know, when in fact there's just, you know, it's my dream. It's only my mind in need of healing. So whenever it feels harsh, it doesn't matter what the seeming cause is. We know, you know, that's just good information that it shows us that we've chosen the ego again, because we don't know, we're not aware that we're a decision maker most of the time. And so we have to look to our reactions to tell us which teacher we've chosen. And, you know, whenever we're feeling that harshness around the course or around anything else in our seeming lives, that's really showing us that, you know, that I want to be the bread box. I don't want to be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. We do want to be the bread box.
Yeah.
I love that. Because I love little things that attract my attention that I can remember. And the bread box story certainly does that. So, Susan, we are coming up to our break. So, everybody out there, please sit tight. We will be back in 5 minutes and we will continue to talk about how we are not bread boxes and how we can incorporate some of these principles into our daily lives. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and about spirituality.
Whatever you're doing, you have a minute to stop and listen to this important workbook lesson from A Course in Miracles.
Lesson 94, I am as God created me. Today we continue with the one idea which brings complete salvation, the one statement which makes all forms of temptation powerless, the one thought which renders the ego silent and entirely undone. You are as God created you. The sounds of this world are still, the sights of this world disappear, and all the thoughts that this world ever held are wiped away forever by this one idea. Here is salvation accomplished. Here is sanity restored. You can hear the entire lesson by going to the archives on the 12radio.com site. For more information about A Course in Miracles, please see the Foundation for A Course in Miracles at www.facim.org. Welcome back, everybody. This is CA, and you are listening to A Course in Miracles on 12 Radio, changing the way we think about life and spirituality. And my guest today is author and teacher Susan Dugan. And we've been talking about, before the break, how we are not the bread box. And Susan, I really do love that example because, like I said, I kind of hang my hat, so to speak, or, you know, I have what I call a spiritual toolbox. In fact, I think next week we will talk about the spiritual toolbox. And so it's great to have these little analogies or to have these ideas, these visuals that we can remember. And that's, you know, when you were telling us the story of Helen and all of a sudden just coming to that realization that she was feeling attacked because she was feeling like she was the bread box and that she's not. That was just a wonderful, wonderful little example. So thank you very much for that.
Well, yes, and thank you, Ken, and,
yeah,
and the foundation
right.
for that. But yes, it's very helpful. It just stops you, you know. So, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, as we continue our conversation, I want to say something that you were saying during the break, because it just is so, so important. And that is just the idea of the gentleness and to be gentle with ourselves, to not be the disciplinarian or the authoritarian with ourselves and all this information and the way we do it. And that, to me, is really the gift of listening to Ken Wapnick. I read a lot of his books, but I really get it when I listen to him because he's quite funny and he's so incredibly gentle. And that's not my nature. My nature is to just go after it, you know? And in fact, something we had listened to a few weeks ago, one of the Ken spots, he had literally said in an interview to Mark Husson, when Mark said, well, what's something that you could leave us with? Or, you know, if you had advice and this was the advice you were going to give to somebody, what would you say? And Ken said, lighten up.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, oh, you know, you were expecting some great philosophical thing. And Ken says, lighten up.
Oh, I know. So, yeah. I mean, that in the interviews that I did with him, the thing that he said to me more often than not was, don't take it so seriously, you know? And of course, you know, as a serious course student, but what do you mean? I have to be devoted, but I don't take it seriously. And you know, I'm not a really serious, I mean, I do have a sense of humor, you know, but so it took me a long time to really grasp what he was saying, I think. But it is to do with that gentleness. And, you know, one of the things, I mean, this is a process. And one of the things that I think happens to us as we go along and we're letting, you know, we're allowing the undoing of more and more of the guilt by owning our own projections is that, you know, and we were talking about that during the break, is that we start attacking ourselves more. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's another sneaky way for the ego to kind of join the journey. And it feels, you know, it feels horrible. I mean, we can really get into a head trip on ourselves where, and I've done this a lot, where you, you know, my ego voice will say, you know, look at, you know, what an imposter you are teaching and writing about this course. Look at your own mess you've made of things.
Yeah.
You know? Look at your own life. You know, is it perfect? No, not by a long shot. You know, and just all of that chatter, this just kind of condemning chatter, you know, that goes on. And also that you're never going to get there kind of stuff. You know, you're not, mm-hmm. there's not enough time in the world for you to make it home. And, you know, again, so we're trying to identify our progress with the course and all that nonsense. And you know, really, it's just, when that happens, the best thing that we can do is to just question that, you know, question that. I'm wrong. I'm wrong about everything. And then really invite in that presence of Jesus, Holy Spirit. I mean, the reason that we're condemning ourselves is that we've chosen the ego as our teacher. So the more we can try to go through this practice and process consciously, you know, beginning our day by asking for making our purpose that we want to look at everything and everyone that happens, all of our reactions with Jesus. That's our intention, and then remind ourselves constantly throughout the day when we catch ourselves reacting, that's our intention, you know, and going back to that, which purpose am I giving this? And, you know, there's only two purposes for our reactions. There's only two, you know, reasons that we would be reacting. And one is to root ourselves more deeply in this dream of exile from love. And the other is to take another step toward awakening. And, you know, that's another way of saying we have two teachers. It's if I choose the ego as my teacher, and I know I've chosen the ego as my teacher whenever it feels harsh, whenever I'm reacting, whenever I have any negative emotion and I'm pointing a finger outside to the cause of that, then I know that I've taken the ego's hand again, and that's not a sin, you know, that's just mistaken. Mm-hmm. I became afraid again. Because again, this is very unconscious. I think I'm defending my bread box, right? If we want to stick with that analogy. And, you know, the other purpose is, you know, I want to take another baby step toward awakening. So we turn again to, you know, no, I don't want this. I want to see it your way instead. And our entire day becomes saying that our life is a classroom, our entire day becomes an exercise in realigning ourselves, catching ourselves when we become afraid again, reminding ourselves we're just afraid, and you know, asking to see this instead with Jesus, and then waiting, because you know we don't. It's probably not going to be an instant aha. Oh, I feel great. You know,
right?
It's not like that. We will return to peace. I mean, it's usually not, because we have this unconscious resistance. But over time, we will return to peace, and we will have that shift in awareness that in which, you know, we see our sameness, in which compassion for everyone returns, and including myself, in which we're not trying to make guilt real, and we'll know that because we're not feeling it.
Right.
So, you know.
And, you know, you've brought up like 3-4 ideas here, and each one I'm like, I want to jump on that, you know, that I think are so important. But one of them is, and I'm going to use the analogy of a torpedo, which seems like an odd thing, but it's just like you said, it's not a sin. It's just a mistake. It just needs to be corrected. And I've often thought, I mean, even before I found the Course in Miracles, I just always loved the idea of a torpedo, because it's going towards a goal. And for the most part, I don't know a lot about the engineering or the mechanics, but they can self-correct. So if the goal, if whatever they're trying to hit or the goal shifts, then the torpedo can also shift its direction. And so it doesn't just say, well, this is the path I was on, too bad. And, or it doesn't also get on, you know, it doesn't judge itself and say, oh, I made a mistake. It simply says, mistake, recalculating. Kind of like those GPSs in the car, right? They don't go, CA, what were you thinking going left? You know, it just says recalculating. And so that's what we do all day long. along, whereas I think sometimes we don't. You know, it's kind of, it goes back to, I've seen people do this with diets, and I see them do it with their budget. It's like, oh, well, I already ate something I shouldn't have eaten today, so I'm just going to go crazy. You know,
for
or
sure,
I've already blown the budget, so I'm going to go crazy. Whereas the truth is, our day, it's not a matter of, okay, you made, you know, you're sinful or you made a mistake. You made a mistake, and now you are recalculating. And that's what we need to do throughout the entire day. All of our waking moments is just say recalculating.
That's a great analogy. I mean, because it is that thing of, you know, it's okay, I was there I go again. You know, and that's that lightness. If we can look at it that way, the torpedo, I don't know. Torpedoes could be a little destructive, but it is that, but you're right. I mean, they're being programmed by the mind, you know? And so we forget that we've programmed these and these thoughts, and we've forgotten that we're the programmer. And so, you know, it is it's simply catching ourselves and allowing, you know, allowing, again, I'm not really in charge here. You know, I mean, I am, but I don't know it. So it's asking the part of me that remembers I'm in charge to help, you know, to recalculate. I don't want this because it's going to be hurtful. It doesn't end well. I know enough now to see that this doesn't, you know, to associate my suffering with this, with you know, my interpretation, which teacher I've chosen. And I'm learning that, you know, the calm and the comfort and sense of innocence, and, you know, that I am still loved and loving, will come through my recalculating to the Holy Spirit's point of view.
Right. And, you know, here's another point that I wanted to make, is that it's intriguing to me when they keep saying there is no hierarchy in miracles. And the idea that we sometimes go through our lives and we're going, well, I wasn't just like really angry. I was just a little frustrated. I was just a little irritated, and just not recognizing that any single moment that is not total joy, any single moment of even a tiny irritation ought to be a red flag.
Absolutely.
You know, and at first it was sort of like, no, I'm only looking for the major crashes, you know?
Right.
And so then I think the more you practice, the more you're willing to kind of see this as, what is the choice that I'm making? Then you recognize even the smallest error, you know, the smallest mistake of all of a sudden starting to go down some path that you don't really want the outcome. So even a little bit of irritation, a little bit of frustration can be a red flag that, you know, you should be going recalculating. And
yes.
In fact, some of the notes that you sent to me, one of the things you said, and you could elaborate a little bit more on this, but you put the statement, what is the purpose of my reaction to blank?
Right. Right, exactly. And the purpose is, you know, again, there's only two purposes. One is to root me more deeply in this dream of exile from love, and one is to help me awaken. And I have that choice in any moment. But what you're saying is exactly right. Every reaction that we have, anything that is negative, is a symptom of the guilt in our mind. So if and always our secret agenda to point a finger at something, at someone else, you know, to hold some to make the cause outside ourselves, outside the mind. And so any twinge, minor twinge of annoyance, the Course says, you know, hides the thought of murder. I mean, that's I'm paraphrasing probably, but so our opportunity is to become pay very close attention to how we're feeling and to what we're you know, where we're pointing a finger. Mm-hmm. And that's our, you know, the minor twinge of annoyance could be that somebody cut in front of me, in line at the supermarket, or, you know, somebody, you know, cut me off in traffic. It can be something seemingly very minor, but if it doesn't annoy us, no problem. But if it does annoy us, or we have any thought, toward that person, that's, you know, that's pointing a finger, then that's something that we need to begin to apply this with and say, oh, there I became, you know, I just became afraid again, and I don't want this.
Yeah, I became the bread box. I got confused, and I thought that I was a body in the car and not literally, a divine being.
Exactly. And you know what, and when you were talking about that, I thought too, that one thing I've noticed over the, and I've been practicing the Course for about 10 years, And I've noticed increasingly in recent years that we become much so, even the minor twinge of annoyance. When I first read that, that was hiding a thought of murder, or, you know, whatever the direct quote is, I couldn't really relate to that because I was so unaware. But this process makes you very aware, very sensitive to what you're really thinking and feeling. And so, because you're paying attention to it now. And so, I find that even the minor twinge of annoyance is so much more painful. It's not a minor twinge anymore. I can relate. I can really see how it is the same thought, you know? I mean, I can feel it. I know that this really doesn't feel good. And so that's my motivation increasingly, even with the small things, to say, you know, no, I don't want this. Because as we spend, you know, as we spend more time right-minded, spend more time with that very loving, gentle presence in our mind, we feel so bereft when we've dropped that hand. I do. It feels very dark, you know, I'm more aware of that darkness. And of course, that's my resistance. But, you know, the contrast between those two thought systems, as those two teachers, seems vast to me now in ways that maybe it didn't before. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. To even get to that place consciously, when we say to ourselves, what's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of my reaction? And really being honest with ourselves and going, yeah, because I want to prove I'm right. I want to hate that person, or I want to say that person's wrong, or I want to say that person made a mistake because I somehow mistakenly think that's going to make me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. And just getting very conscious. And, you know, along the same line, this is an example I use quite often, but because once again, it just stuck in my mind. It was years ago, maybe in the 80s. I read a set of books called Emmanuel's book. Mm-hmm. And I still to this day love the spirituality and the gentleness of those books. But this is a channeled being, and the woman was, it's one of the books in particular is question and answer, where she was in front of an audience and asking questions, and Emmanuel through her would answer. And a woman asked her something, you know, she said, you know, I just don't have time for spirituality in my life. I mean, I'm getting the kids' lunches, I'm taking them to school, and then it's this and that, and how can I possibly ever, you know, make time for spirituality in my life? Now, once again, I picture Emmanuel as this kind of very gentle, kind of funny teacher, because the answer was something equivalent to, oh, so you're asking me whether or not spiritual beings or angels, if they take kids to school and make lunches and go to the PTA, right? And he goes, well, apparently they do. I mean, and it was just this very simple answer. But the idea is, you're never not the spiritual being.
Right.
And if you think that you get up in the morning and you do your meditation and that's the extent of your spirituality, or if you think that's the extent of your practice with any spiritual discipline, but especially A Course in Miracles, that's not the point. The point isn't to do it for 30 minutes in the morning and let it go. It's the idea that you realize that while you're making the lunches, while you're driving the kids to school, while you're talking with a client, while you're driving to Starbucks, every single moment you are the spiritual being.
Right, right. And really, from the Course's perspective, what that means is looking at all of the ways you try to insist you're not, you know, so it's really looking at all the times when you forget that
right.
You know, when you're trying to be combative, when you're trying to be right, when you're trying to defend yourself, and, you know, all of the compare yourself, compete, all of those things that we get so caught up in around, you know, making the idea of my meanness, you know, M-E-N-E-S-S, real. And meanness probably too. But, but you know, I mean, real. So it's really that, you know, it's, again, it's so being as present as we can possibly be throughout our day. And that takes a lot of practice. I mean, you know, to forgive ourselves when we're not, but then realign, you know, and the more we make this our intention and try to remind ourselves throughout the day, what is my purpose? What am I, you know, what do I really want? And it's kind of like over time, I think a lot of, for me, it's beginning to, things that seemed so important seem to fall away a little bit, you know, and kind of recede. It isn't that I'm not still doing the same things, but I don't, my investment in them, you know, my purpose for them has changed. My purpose for them has become, I want to learn. I want to learn that we're the same. I want to heal my mind. I don't want to be reactive all the time. I don't want to be in combat all the time. I want peace, you know? And so if that's my goal of learning, and I can look at myself as being wrong throughout my day, and you know, of course I'm not there yet, but that's okay, you know? And actually, one of the things that I kind of heard, I mean, I don't, it's not like I get downloads or I'm channeling or anything, but I
yes, you probably are.
I had been struggling for a while and before I went to Temecula with, again, in one of those periods of a lot of doubt with, you know, that I would ever make it, and just indulging that harsh voice of the ego. And kind of what I heard while I was there at one point was in Ken's voice, and I call it his goofball voice, because he was a very lighthearted man, you know, and it was kind of like, he just kind of said, you know, you'll get there. And it was like, you know, like no big deal. You'll get there. Okay. You're not there yet. You'll get there. You know,
and
that was so comforting, because that's really, you know, that's the truth. And we'll get there. Maybe we're not there yet, but that's just because we're afraid. And, you know, it's, we're all going to get there. It's a lie when you hear that you're not going to get there if you're practicing this. So, you know, try not to take it seriously. Try to just say liar, liar, pants on fire, you know?
Right. Well, and you know, I love to do watercolor. And I took a week-long workshop with somebody, and the teacher, you know, people are, it's amazing how competitive they can get, you know, and wanting to compare and having the teacher talk about their work, etc. And it's so, he was not a Ken person, but it kind of jokingly in the same way, he goes, you want to know who the best student is? He goes, you want to know who the best watercolor artist is? He said, show me how many paintings you've done. The person who has the biggest stack is the best painter.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
his point was just, this isn't about whether you think you have natural talent. It's a person who practices it.
Absolutely.
It's a person who does it every day of their lives. He goes, that's the person who's going to be the best watercolor artist. And, you know, and that just like, it just kind of takes the wind out of everybody's sails, you know, because once again, you got to do it. You've just got to do it. You've got to practice. And it needs to be a daily or a moment by moment practice. That's how you get there, where you're going. And as long as you're practicing, you will get there.
Right. You'll get there. And, you know, we don't have to worry about when. There is no real time anyway from the course's perspective. So now, right now, where, you know, which teacher have I chosen?
That's
right.
We
can do that. Yeah.
Well, and Susan, we have about 4 minutes left, and I know that you have some new classes that you're offering in Denver. So if people are in Denver and they want to attend some in-person classes with Susan, those, do you teach all of them at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center?
Yes, yes.
And, okay, and do you want to take about a minute and just say what
sure.
you've got going? And by the way, I did post a link in the chat room to her website blog, and specifically to the classes. So once again, if you're in Denver and you want to check out those classes, you can go to the chat room and look at that. But go ahead, Susan, you want to tell us about them?
Sure. Well, I teach anyway every Tuesday night. I've been teaching recently the Song of Prayer pamphlet, and we're about to conclude that in the next couple weeks. And so I will be teaching a workshop at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center on May 4th, Sunday, May 4th, from 1 to 4 p.m. And, there's more information on my website, and I guess you've given them that link. But what it says is from the preface of A Course in Miracles, and it is this amazing summary of all of the themes in the course. It's kind of just this, you know, if you could take the course and just condense it into three or four pages, that's what it says. And it was scribed by Helen in the same way that the course was about a year after the course's first publication, as a way of, you know, explaining this to people, giving people this introduction, and it covers both the metaphysics of the course, which are the non-dualistic metaphysics of the course, as well as the practical application of the course, and a really thorough explanation of forgiveness. So that class will focus on what it says, and it will include some real life examples of forgiveness and a guided meditation to give people some experience of what we're talking about internally with the process of forgiveness. And then beginning that Tuesday following on May 6th, my Tuesday classes will shift to considering the text. And we're going to go through the text chronologically, although, through selected readings. We're not going to read every little section. But and I'm going to try to integrate with that anything that occurs to me that is helpful from the workbook, from the pamphlets, the manual for teachers. So it won't, we'll try to make it a little more holistic than that. And then also some of Ken's, some of Ken's CD sets.
Okay. All right. Well, Susan, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, and I look forward to our next discussion. And everybody, thank you for joining me today, the listeners and everybody in the chat room. I really appreciate it. And I have been looking at your comments, even though I didn't get time to respond. But thank you for being there. And thanks to Scott Weaver, our producer. And thanks to Mark Husson, the developer of 1-2 Radio and the person who introduced me to A Course in Miracles. And throughout the week, you can find me for readings, personal consultations, mentoring, and coaching on 1-2listen.com, where I am a psychic astrologer and advisor. Now, you have about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea and be back in time for The Through Line with Christine Dumouriez coming up next on Fabulous Fridays on 1-2 Radio. And as we close the show today, we will be listening to Karen Drucker singing Thank You for This Day. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.